Yeah, so the 1.59, or yeah, the 1.592 is a direct request from the school district, and there's a transmittal letter from Tammy and Bill to demonstrate that. So we just passed that along, really neutral on, for purposes of the budget. As we work through in work sessions, we just budgeted it as prior years because it's been consistently the same. But certainly anything that happens tonight will be reflected in that next draft. So as far as capacity to sustainably fund at this kind of level, I think we kind of got to put our heads together on what that means. I mean, if we were funding it entirely from sales tax and SRS together, I think we can get there. But to fund it completely from the borough's general revenues, which namely sales tax and property tax, you know, those revenues would have to increase to sustain this level of funding, essentially, as well as provide all our other general government services.
Somebody on the board, did you have something? No, Assembly Member Howe.
I mean, I think you all know where I stand on this particular issue. I'm not going to lie to you and say that I don't care about public education. What does an aspirational budget look like, Bill? Like, if we're talking about increasing opportunity, what does that look like?
Okay, so again, through the chair.
Sorry,
Assembly
Mr.
Member
Mayor.
Howe, thank you.
Maybe I need that training.
Superintendent Marr, you want to come up? And I think we have a few questions that we'd like to know about.
I'll do the online presentation.
Okay, let's just stay on task here. So the question is, you know, we sort of heard anecdotal stuff from teachers and a little bit from the board president. You know, what does an aspirational budget look like? What are you not doing, I guess, that you'd like to do?
Many, many things, of course.
Pick the top three.
Yeah. One of the areas that we are in desperate need is our support staff. The support staff, it's very hard to get. And that adds a substantial pressure on a lot of our programs, including our special programs. And we can't get the positions filled because we are trying to stretch ourselves very, very thin. It's difficult to say a specific number on an aspirational budget, but what we don't have are the electives. What we don't have are the smaller class sizes, all of which would play a role. If we could have additional money, we could start doing all of the things that we want, having those special programs like music and art and being able to not look at opportunities because of costs specifically. When we look at, for example, our sports schedule this last year, due to one location having a very high amount, we had to roll back to stay within budget. We had to roll back an opportunity on every sport with one trip. So it when we're looking at it, trying to stay budget neutral, trying to stay in line, and we are trying to stay at a zero line budget, we can't do the extras that are there. And we become dependent on grants written by students or the title programs which keep being rolled back or the possibility that we have $15,000 to $50,000 coming in the art program. When we're looking at just trying to even out, then our services get cut back because everything has to give. And we are working with trying to increase paraprofessional and sub pay. But to do that, we have to remove from other services because we're there. We're trying to stay even and stay within our budget. So realistically, we would love to continue the conversation with the borough and really look at that. But I can't throw a number out because that's not good due diligence on our part.
One of the Superintendent, one of the questions is on this paraprofessional wages. So have we done a study? Do we know how we rank? Is it, and I'm not thinking to other communities, but within the community. So can somebody work at Search and do a lot better than as a paraprofessional? And yeah, so trust me, that's everywhere. That's the city too. So we can't find anybody to be security in our harbor because nobody wants to do it. But what is the additional there? Do you, like, what are you currently paying? Where do you see yourself having to pay?
For
our professionals?
It depends on the job itself, but some of our positions start currently at $14 an hour. That's $2 an hour less than is working at IGA or Audison's, for example. And we can't offer benefits. We are paying 5.75 hours, trying to keep our numbers low because insurance and benefits is an incredible cost above that. So we are attempting to move up pay, but we can't do the second half of that. So when we're competing with Search at sometimes $9 and $10 an hour higher, plus full benefits at a medical clinic, it's very difficult. We are right now depending on staff members that have a vocation to the school district and to our students. And that is a dangerous situation to be in when that is what it is taking. So it's very difficult to have a family when they're looking at it saying, we can't afford to continue. And that is we can't do everything at first, but we desperately need help. If we want our schools to operate, to make a drastic increase in one area, it'll cost instructional staff on another. And if that's how it works. It's our largest percentage, aside from facilities.
And you were quoted as saying that you felt, due to the paraprofessionals, this was in the paper, I believe I read it or heard it on the radio, that due to the paraprofessional crisis, you were looking at potentially going back to distance learning. So how does that affect the budgets if you make that decision? You know, how does that affect your budget? Do you save money? Does it cost you more? Where do you wind up on that?
Part of it is that educational safety aspect. We need to make sure that our students are safe in the school. If staff is so truncated down due to illness or other options, it's difficult to do that. Where specifically budget savings would be, and this is not why we put that out, is hourly wage employees in a full distance learning in a school would not have hours. But that is not what we were looking at. And I want to clarify that we were looking at distance learning due to staffing alone. Either we couldn't fill the positions, or it was the teaching staff or others that had been filling in. So it was not trying to save money for that reason. It was making sure that our students were getting a very solid education. But if we have staff that we cannot fill, if we have positions that we cannot fill, especially in our special services area, then that's the best educational option that we can offer.
Other questions for superintendent or for city manager or for Mason Blair, finance director? Thank you very much, superintendent. All right, well, with that, then I think we'll call the roll. Assemblymember Powell.
So, Ms. Harrison, for one, yeah, I did grow up here, and I think the school should be funded as high, as much as we can. The perception in town, and I'll tell you that I lived here all my life, so I get to hear everything, and I'm in a spot where I get a lot of people come in and talk to me. And I'm just going to say, you know, I, for one, I want to fund the whole thing, okay? That's just me on this. I agree with the mayor here that a lot of you guys weren't here for that workshop we had, but it was very enlightening. It was very perceived from both people, both sides, that things were moving forward. We were starting to see things differently. The funding, the way we've done it in the last 3 years, the town does know how we did it. The town does understand why we did it, because we didn't know what we were funding. That was the bottom line. We were given numbers, and then the numbers changed on us, and I mean, it was crazy. So, and that was not just for the school district. That was in our own house. So it was very hard to say yes to additional money. This is not a fight between the school and the city. This is about where we're going to get money to fund everything, and the school is one of them. Okay, I just want you guys all to know, and in the community to know, that us sitting up here, we have a lot of decisions to make on just not the school. So my saying is that I would like to fund this. I would really like to have more discussions on another way to fund the school to get programs back. I don't want my grandkids coming up to lose anything. And I agree. I mean, you cannot have a mediocre school and draw people into this town. I understand that, and I also understand that the budgets from the states are all going up, and it's great, the oil's all up and all that stuff, and it looks really good, but I just want to caution that, like Mr. Mason said, if you fund this to this amount, we still have to watch our money. We still have to next year look at this and go, okay, where are we at, what can we do? I don't want to ask everyone to think that this is just going to be a given every year, that we don't look at it, we just start funding to the full amount that we can. But that's where I'm at with it. I'm going to vote to fund it to this amount and possibly more if we have that discussion.
Okay. Thank you. All right. With that, we'll...
Oh, and one more thing.
Sorry, hold on. Just a second. Go ahead.
But dude, I will say firsthand... Superintendent Burr, I really appreciate all the work you've been doing. I know firsthand about it because I don't see my wife very much.
Assemblymember DeBoer, you would like to amend the motion? You certainly may amend the motion.
I would like to amend the motion for the maximum contribution of $1,617,629.
It's been moved. Do we have a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Powell, and discussion. Assemblymember Howe.
Through the chair, where would the funding, would it all come from, as you're envisioning, would it all come from general revenue, or would it come from SRS plus?
So the way it's...
Please go ahead.
The way it's written in here is 660 from WPSD Local Contribution Fund, with the remaining from the Secure Rural Schools Fund, page 197.
Mason, do you want to come up?
Yeah, so the way that it's budgeted right now, we just 20% of budgeted sales tax, so $3,360,000 from sales tax proceeds directly to the school, and then the remainder in excess of the contribution would just come from the SRS fund. Basically, our general revenues aren't sufficient enough to support the additional local contribution, so for this year, it would be my recommendation to Jeff that we use the SRS funding. That would put us at about a $2.2 million SRS fund balance at the end of fiscal year 23, just so you guys are aware.
Ms. Murray?
Yep, go ahead.
So the question is, if we fund more money, for me, is what is it going to do for the school? What is it, are we going to... I'm trying to understand, are we going to get another teacher? Are we going to, is that what we're looking at? Are we looking at raising rate or pay? I mean.
Well, actually, I think we don't review their budget.
No, I'm just wondering, if you give more money, what do we look at? What's the school going to look at to do? I'm not directing them to do it.
No, I understand. Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's probably tough to come up with on the spur of the moment. I already did that to poor Superintendent Barr. I don't want to do that again. My feeling on it is that as long as we're confident in the ability that we can afford it, and you're saying we take this from the SRS reserve, which has a downside to it, that we're not pulling it from our general fund. I wonder, it's almost a question of would the school board and superintendent prefer to play it lean or dip into that, into that reserve. That's the kind of the question for me. And so I don't know, Mason, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, so basically any money you're taking away from SRS, I mean, you're taking away from the savings account long term. The SRS contribution, or the National Forest Receipts amount we received this year is $1.171 million. Last year was $796,000. So that's a pretty sizable increase. We'd still be saving in that, it'd be about $900,000 out of SRS and then the $660-ish from sales tax. I mean, obviously sales tax, we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we could go into a full-blown recession and 20% of our sales tax might not be a whole lot. So, but that's what we're budgeting off of. So, I would say that the SRS funding should sustain itself, so we should still be in that savings mode. And I think a couple other considerations would be, we're also investing a lot in the facilities of the school this year. We have $935,000 for the high school fire alarm replacement, and then also the elevator modernization and the underground storage tank. So that's pretty sizable for the borough to digest as well. We also, per conversations with Larry Persley from the Sentinel, he's up in Juneau, and I talked to Tammy about it as well, are eligible for reimbursement from previously neglected school bond debt reimbursement. So 2017, 2020, and 21 portions of our school bond debt were not reimbursed to the full degree. So we're looking at 300 and some odd thousand, possibly. It's on the House floor, I believe, at the state. So could receive that. It'd be an external source of revenue that we didn't really anticipate. So.
And where would that be booked?
That would flow through us first, and then that could be.
That goes,
yep.
Because the school was paying their own school. Were we paying the bond, was the school paying the bond?
We paid the bond. Yep. Yeah. So on our books as long term debt.
So I guess my question is, if we were paying that bond, and this is a reimbursement back on payments that we had made, would that flow to our general fund then?
It would be up to you guys on how, I mean, truly it should come back to the debt service fund, and then you guys could reallocate per whatever you guys decide. But yeah, it should go back to the debt service fund.
I wonder
first.
If there's some wisdom in if there's some wisdom in potentially earmarking that money to go directly to the school. Keep the motion, I mean, I can't make a motion, but I guess what I'm throwing out to the assembly is we keep it where it's at. But we earmark that additional funds that could flow back to the school, then we're not tapping our savings for future reference. Just a thought, Mason. Do you have an idea on that?
Yeah, we just got to be careful on the composition of our contribution, because what I understand through conversations with Tammy is we can't have SRS be part of the local contribution and federal pass-through. So, in other words, if we exceed the maximum contribution through a combination, it's disallowed to use the National Forest receipts as a split source. So
so we would need the minimum contribution of 741 to come from our general funds.
No. So we would need, so essentially the SRS funding can only be used in one capacity, either the local contribution or a federal pass-through. So if we're not going to fund it in some way, shape, or form through our general revenues up to the maximum, then essentially we have to use SRS, right? And if we can't use SRS as a local contribution, then, you know, you kind of understand what I'm saying?
I do, and as I sit here and think about it, in some ways,
yeah.
It's...
Go ahead, Tammy.
Go ahead, Tammy.
Okay. The way it would work is you can count all your SRS as federal taxes received as long as your local contribution reached the minimum required contribution.
Oh, okay.
So that would be 7.1489. So if you had a local contribution that met of tax funds and new funds from bonded and didn't, at least 7.1, the entire SRS could be counted as federal taxes, and you would still get a full foundation funding.
Thanks, Tammy, for that clarification. Yeah, okay.
So, Mr. Mayor, if I could, that would be, yeah, so if we increase that 741, right now we're at 660, so it'd be another $80,000. Then we can meet the minimum threshold with our local contribution, and then whatever you do after that would be for the SRS.
I guess I was just looking at it as found money, and we weren't expecting that school bond debt reimbursement to come back into the debt servicing account, and that potentially that could be utilized to help to offset some of the concerns that the school has. But I also don't know if you had sort of earmarked that in some other capacity for some other project. I don't want to...
No, and I think that's kind of a maybe, so we can't really, you know, earmark that quite yet. And then, Tammy, I believe our funding composition is due to you guys on the 18th, is that right? So we have to actually explicitly say what sources of funding we're using in that contribution.
So, Mr. Mayor, I mean, like I said, one recommendation would be that if we bumped up our local contribution from 660 to 741, it'd be another 80,000. But then that would give us options as well with the SRS funding.
I like that. And so, in essence, that's the motion currently that
it would be a little bit it would I mean, if we still use the 640, I think we'd be above that. We would, you know, be at, yeah, we could still max it out. We just bump up our local contribution to 741,
because really what Assemblymember DeBoer's motion was not the specifics of how we come up with that, the matrix for right. That funding. Okay, I'm comfortable with that. That explains it well. Yeah.
So, and in the motion doesn't have to explicitly say where the funding is coming from, but the letter that Finance Director Palomar will send to the school district will explain that.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any other question on the amendment? Hearing none, please call the roll on the amendment.
To change the amount, the Assemblymember Dalrymple?
Yes.
David Powell?
Yes.
Board?
Yes.
Brian Howe?
Yes.
And Mayor Persaud?
Yes. Okay. Is there any discussion now on the amended motion? Hearing none, please call the roll, Kim.
Okay. Assembly members David Powell?
Yes.
DeBoer?
Yes.
Brian Howe?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
And Mayor Persaud?
Yes. And with that, we're going to take a 5-minute recess so people that want to bail out can. I really appreciate all of you coming. And so we're going to recess at 7.
Well, I have to leave our question security camera.
Well, wait, I got a thing. You'll be here tomorrow night.
No, I'm okay.
No,
David,
no. You have no excuse. You have no excuse at all. You need training.
I
you need a terrible. You're welcome. You got a what?
Oh, I know you do.
Baby boy.
I heard what a wonderful ball.
Thank you.
There you go.
My host sister was all young.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you all very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
I don't think
so.
That.
Oh, God.
Sometimes.
Oh, thank you. I've had it twice.
The good times roll, man.
Oh, my God.
The hits just keep
on
coming.
I've got an infinite home.
Yeah.
Thank you.
one growing in me and one in the
back. Thank you. Not too bad. She got to make you a
motion. Yes.
The gallery is empty except for Chris, who's got to bail out really fast. Okay, moving on to new business. 13B, discussion and possible direction to discuss potential timber cruise at Sunny Bay property requested by Assembly Member DeBoer. There's no motion here, so Jeff, do you want to walk us through this?
I can. So, actually, I had some really good conversations with the Forest Service over the past couple weeks, and I kind of put out before you, and I got an updated one as well as far as kind of what they had for their information for Sunny Bay, and it kind of, a couple things they did on the latest one I gave you is it kind of gives you a couple different setbacks as far as what we may have to do. Again, there's some questions on whether it's public or private, and that there's some certain setbacks as far as what you have to do. So if you look around the streams, he kind of did build in a setback from there as far as where Nathan did it for us, as far as where that would be. And then if we did like a 500-foot setback off of the ocean, kind of where that would be. And then if you look at the color coding, your light blue is kind of the middle of the ground lumber as far as the, you know, 5 to 20 to 30 million board feet per acre, because I think that's like 2,000 board feet per acre. And then if it's 4 to 9 to 20, that's the other color there. So that would be the area that you could actually probably timber. And then the purple, that's actually your more rich timber. That's the 6 to 30 to 50 MBF per acre. I'm working with them as well to possibly try to see if we can work something with them where they may be able to do a timber cruise for us, but we're still in talks about what they can do for us and if we can partner on something, working with them to try to get a general idea. So we could either kind of go with this and try to get a timber cruise we pay for, or I can continue negotiations with the Forest Service to kind of work with them to see what they can provide to give us a general idea of like a dollar value. That would be something that I'm trying to work with them to see if they can provide for us. And they did have a general numbers as far as what the price per board feet, depending on the class of the wood is, the actual trees. So they do have some general numbers. Like, they have the most up-to-date as far as what everything's going for, is red cedar, spruce, and yellow cedar. So they have those numbers, but they would need to actually come in here and do a breakdown as far as where it's at, the location. And then something to think about as well as we go into here, and I think I had it on the last drawing, is, you know, potentially where we might want some roads, because roads would have to be put in there, but, you know, where we would want them, how we want it done, because that could potentially then, if we do it in a manner that you put roads in here and then we want to develop it for cabins and things like that, that would then give access to cabins. You have some nice clear-cut areas where, you know, for hunting, things like that. So I think it would just give us some options, especially if we could get them to give us a number first where they would recommend it. And then that would give us a starting point to where we would go to then look at how we develop it from there. That's just my recommendations from what in my talks with them.
Send them to the board.
I mean, if things we get it free from the Forest Service and get a pretty accurate depiction of what we have, free's always better than going out and paying for it.
I didn't say free.
Well, I'm saying free.
$3.99.
So I think we still kind of pursue that. My big issue is, you know, it's in the budget for next year to do this. What I don't want to do is miss the summer opportunity to go have somebody boots on the ground and cruise it and find out what the true value is. And I, you know, I don't want to wait an extra year. That's kind of always want to see if we put on RP or whatever this time, like, so that by July 1st, when the funds are there, they can be boots on the ground and go. You know, I've been working on this for 3-4 years now, trying to get some traction on this. I just don't want to see it delayed an additional year, because if that happens, then we get a cruise next summer and it's the summer after that before we could even do anything. Timber values are pretty high now, so if we're ever going to take advantage of it, sooner than later. Free reduce would be good. But the other thing, the other side of that is do, I still don't even know what the ballpark of the cruise would be if we went out for, so that's kind of what I was looking at RP to figure out, is it $100,000? Is it $1 million? Are we going to do the whole thing? I don't want to cut ourselves short by taking the free route and then find out that it costs us millions in the long run either. So I guess my direction would be if we could continue something with the Forest Service so we could get a ballpark depiction hopefully in like the next couple of weeks of what it would be worth and then continue. Because when I talked to these people, and this was 3 years ago before COVID hit, before timber values went through the roof, they're talking anywhere from 2,000 to 20,000 an acre. And there's a huge variance. So if we could get some type of a ballpark and then maybe circle back to this and see, is that substantial enough for us? The other side of that is that going to be significant enough for a timber buyer? You know, because it's kind of the other aspect of the cruise here is now we can present this to the buyer and say, and we had an independent person go out, they cruised this, these are the compositions of the trees we have, these are the values, you know, so they've got something from a, you know, essentially an independent source, even though we paid for it, they know what they're getting into too, and is it worth it for them to go down there, cut it, build the roads that are necessary, and abide by all the regulations that are necessary. I've looked at this for years as just a huge pot of gold that's just never been, I don't think, I was told it was worthless when we started looking at this years ago, that it would cost more to do anything than it was worth. Nobody asked the question, can we even cut the timber? And it took 2 years to get the answer, yeah, we can. So just, the bigger thing to me, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You only cut this once. So I don't want to short ourselves by not getting the full timber cruise as well. So I know that's kind of going around in a circle without really answering the question, but I think if the Forest Service, you're working with them, if we could just pursue it for another couple of weeks, see what that comes back at, and then determine where to go from there, if we need the full cruise or not.
Sally Murhoff.
I agree. I think it'd be nice to move quickly and figure out what's there. This is, I mean, it's a sell-high situation, so if we do have it and it's quality timber, it'd be good to, it would be a significant boon to our economy, or at least our budget. How did they derive this? This is all satellite data?
I believe it is, and then it's sent a lot of the information they've had before as well, but satellite and then the information that they've had, so they'd actually have to go boots on the ground to actually figure out the exact species that are there.
We're going to let our resident
expert you probably know better than I do.
Well, and 500 acres is a buffer.
That's not 500 feet.
No, but it says 500 acres of this property is buffer.
That if you add up the total amount based off, but we possibly don't have to do 500 feet. It's
so. May I?
Please.
I'm really glad that you got this information, because that's kind of what I was telling you, that, you know, hey, they have this. So the Forest Service has they've been managing this forest for timber since the 60s, so however many years, that's 70, 80 years. And when you manage for timber, you do inventories at different levels, and you gather information, and as the environmental concerns got greater, they got more information. So they have almost mind-boggling information that's available. And yeah, the way they did this would have actually been back probably in the 60s or 70s with aerial photos, with people like myself that were gold experts. And you looked at these things under stereoscopes with aerial photography, and you drove on a Mylar, and you could sort of look, and you'd get the feel for what volume class that was in, just by the nature of the thing. And then you would follow up with that with a gross sampling, where you'd go in and kind of validate whether that was it. And so any place that was available for timber from that time probably has all of this. Maybe not wilderness, but this kind of stuff. So anyway, that's what that is. And I think we could get this on all of our properties, you know, whenever we're looking at anything else. Because they have soil maps, they have landslide maps, they have archy sites, they have eagle nests, high-risk land sites. I mean, it's a lot of information. You put it on a map, and it kind of gives you at least the picture. So one thing that I would ask, Jeff, that you would talk to the Forest Service, they may or may not have done a logging system transportation plan, which LSTA, which would be where they would have someone like myself back in the day would have gone in there and not only looked at the timber types, but also the topography and put the road systems in. And how would you do that? Because some ground you can do cable on, some ground you can drive a ground machine on. Others you can only helicopter, and all that has to go in there. And then where would you access this ground from the water? Because you got to have some kind of access point to that. No. And maybe they have that. I would kind of hope so.
They did. When they initially did this, so the actual roads were on here as far as what they would have done. And it was actually not, at least from understanding, not from this parcel, but it was for the adjacent parcel as far as where it included part of this, but it was for the adjacent parcel as well.
Okay. So is that what this is right here then, Bob? Is that's the LSTA? Is that what you were talking about? The LSTA is on this? Is it possible roads?
I couldn't tell. Honestly, when I was looking at my, I couldn't.
Because they say it's LSTA right up here, roads, and down, we're down here. So that was what they proposed at one time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
So that would be good to get on this map, but there may be more information too, like what logging system and stuff. Because
I was just trying to understand what the on here to show it, but on this it's showing.
Yeah, I didn't know what that was, but
Mr. Brown, the initial one I sent, that it was the initial one that I'd received from them with the logging roads, and this is a more detailed map based on recent.
And why that matters is because now you know what you got. You know, you could quantify that, find out what you got. Now, the next step is to sort of figure out how are you going to get it and what it's going to cost you to get it. And that, I think, would weigh into, you know, how much investment you put into this.
One question, I guess, for you, Bob, is would that be allocated in the timber crews up here? I'm not familiar with them from here. I'm familiar with East Coast cruises. Do they take that into account?
Well, I think the words, Jim, Cruz is, in my world, is the measurement of the trees in the specific area that you're going to manage. And before you do that, you need to figure out what areas you're going to manage. Because you could cruise this, and you'd be wasting a lot of money and time by putting plots in, you know, on this stuff that they call lime class 4, for example, or scrub, you know. So you already kind of pick some general terms for when something is economic or not. But I think by going off of what they have now and ask them again, you know, I'm assuming that probably that roading system was there for high lead cable, which is, you know, the standard thing that you build road. They may be able to do quite a bit of this with a shovel, which you don't need cable when you drive around because it's not real steep. And I don't know if there's any kind of full suspension type, you know, issues out there where you have to have big towers and you'll pick the logs completely off the ground. But anyway, I think that they could help a lot in kind of clarifying what this is and give us some information.
I think it's pretty good. We've got, how many years were you working for those folks? I think we've got a good resident expert on the assembly here. I hope we can use your expertise. Yeah,
one last thing. Before. I would like to see how far we could get this buffer reduced, because I am with Ryan. That does take a significant chunk of our timber away.
Okay.
Like what the bare minimum would be.
Would you please try to get us a report for future assembly meetings and on this, and we'll keep following up. I appreciate Assemblymember DeBoer pushing it, and yeah, could be a real source of revenue for us. So fund the school some more. All right. Anybody else? Any other points for discussion? All right. Thank you. Item 13C, approval of tax contribution agreement between. Oh, sorry. 13C was removed. Item 13D, approval of City Borough Tidelands annual 2022 five-year reassessment.
The five-year city guidelines reassessments for tax year 2022 as presented.
Moved by Hal.
Second.
Seconded by DeBoer. Discussion, Jeff, do you want to give us an administrative report on that, please? Third lane.
So this is something that comes before the assembly every year. This is, there are several Tidelands leases that we have, and there were five of them up, well, actually four, but the sea level ones, he split up for Tidelands and the uplands. So, you have before you the assessments on those.
Any questions for Clerk Lane on the assessment? Hearing none, poll vote, please, Kim.
Assemblymembers DeBoer?
Yes.
Ryan Howe?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
David Powell?
Yes.
And Mayor Kasanka?
Yes. Item 14 is the attorney file. That's available for assembly review in the Borough Clerk's office. Item 15, executive session. There is none. Item 16, adjournment at 8:13. Thank you all very much.